All stations, all stations, all call signs. This is Wrecker Actual, over. Stand by for transmission. Prepare to copy. This is American Vindicta.
Good afternoon, and welcome to American Vindicta. This is episode 47. Today's date is January 21st, 2022. Today we are going to be talking about Nazi scientists, their experiments, and also the industry leaders of chemistry of Nazi Germany. Most of us are aware of the many atrocities that occurred during World War II due to the barbarity of the Nazi regime. Many are aware of horrific experiments that took place in some of the concentration camps by the lethal hands of the most notorious Nazi scientist, Joseph Mengele. We know of the mass extermination from the Final Solution and the death camps themselves. But what else is there to uncover? Pulling from the website Auschwitz.org, we learned that the participation of numerous German physicians in criminal medical experiments on concentration camp prisoners was a particularly drastic instance of the trampling of medical ethics. The initiators and facilitators of these experiments were Reichsfuhrer SS Heinrich Himmler, together with SS Ernst Grotz, the chief physician of the SS and police, and the SS Wolfram Sievers, the secretary general of the Ahnenerbe, which is the Ancestral Heritage Association, and the director of the Waffen SS Military Scientific Research Institute. The SS main economic and administrative office, in charge of concentration camps from 1942, had administrative and financial authority. They had support in the form of specialized analytical studies that came from the Waffen SS Hygiene Institute, directed by Oberfuhrer Joachim Murgowski, who is an MD and professor of bacteriology at the University of Berlin Medical School. Experiments were planned at the highest levels to meet the needs of the army. Some were intended to improve the state of soldiers' health, or post-war plans including population policy, or to reinforce the basis of racial ideology, including advancing views as to the superiority of the Nordic race. Aside from experiments planned at the highest levels, many Nazi doctors experimented on prisoners on behalf of German pharmaceutical companies or medical institutes. Others did so in pursuit of their own personal interests or to advance their academic careers. During the Second World War, Nazi doctors pandered to the expectations of the Third Reich leadership by supporting the regime's demographic policies. They initiated wide-ranging research on methods of mass sterilization that would be applied to the peoples regarded as belonging to a lower category. Ladies and gentlemen, everything I'm about to read to you, I want you to take into consideration that this is being put forth as a investigatory research. I am coming at you now, I guess you could say, in my my new role as the inquisitor for the latest foundation of the United States. I am on a path to uncover everything that I possibly can to bring to you, both historical, present, and future planning. I want you to think about everyone that we're about to talk about. I want you to reflect upon these men's, I guess you could say, criminally accounted behavior. There are probably many accounts that we do not have. I have gathered from the best amount of sources that I could find. And everything that I have is something that is going to be documented that you can go forth and also research. I am disturbed and appalled by the things that I have researched since last night and today. I want you to understand that we live in a world where history repeats itself, and human behavior repeats itself. So let us now peer into history so that we can better prepare ourselves for the evils that tomorrow brings. So, one of the first parts of my investigation I want to bring up to you is a man named Joseph Mengele. Joseph Mengele, also known as the German Angel of Death, was born March 16th, 1911, in Günzburg, Germany. He died February 7th, 1979, near Sao Paulo, Brazil. He was a famous Nazi doctor at Auschwitz extermination camp from 1943 to 45, who selected prisoners for execution in the gas chambers. He also conducted medical experiments on inmates in pseudoscientific racial studies. This was a madman that we were talking about. Joseph Mengele's father was the founder of a company that produced farm machinery called a Firma Karl Mengele and Son. In the village of Günzburg, Bavaria, Mengele studied philosophy in Munich in 1920, coming under the influence of the racial ideology of Alfred Rosenberg, and then took to a medical degree at the University of Frankfurt am Main. He enlisted in the Stormtroopers Assault Division in 1933. An ardent Nazi, he joined the research staff of a newly founded Institute for Hereditary Biology and Racial Hygiene in 1934. During World War II, he served as a medical officer with the Waffen-SS, the armed component of the Nazi paramilitary corps. He served in France and Russia. In 1943, he was appointed by Himmler to be the chief doctor at Birkenau, the supplementary extermination camp at Auschwitz, where he and his staff hand-selected incoming Jews for labor or extermination, and where he supervised experiments on inmates to discover means of increasing fertility to increase the German race. His chief interest, however, was research on twins. Mengele's experiments often resulted in the death of every subject. After the war, Mengele escaped internment and went underground. He was serving 4 years as a farm stableman near Rosenheim in Bavaria. Then he reportedly escaped via Genoa, Italy, to South America in 1949. He married for a second time under his own name in Uruguay in 1958, and as Jose Mengele, received citizenship in Paraguay in 1959. In 1961, he apparently moved to Brazil, where reportedly becoming friends with an old-time Nazi, Wolfgang Gerhard, and living in a succession of houses owned by a Hungarian couple. In 1985, a team of Brazilian, West German, and American forensic experts determined that Mengele had taken Gerhard's identity, died in 1979 of a stroke while swimming, and was buried under Gerhard's name. Dental records later confirmed the forensic conclusion. While other Nazi scientists like Dr. Klauberg and Dr. Schumann were busy with experiments designed to develop methods for biological destruction of people they regarded as undesirable, another medical criminal, which the SF Hauptsturmfuhrer, Joseph Mengele, the MD, PhD, was researching the issues of twins and the physiology and pathology of dwarfism in close cooperation with Kaiser Wilhelm Institute of Anthropology and Genetics and Eugenics in Berlin. He was also interested in people with different colored irises and the etiology and treatment of gangrenous diseases of the face known as noma facie cancrum oris and gangrenous stomatitis, a little understood disease endemic to the gypsy prisoners in Auschwitz. In the first phase of the experiments, pairs of twins and persons with inherited anomalies were put at the disposal of Dr. Mengele and subjected to all unimaginable specialist medical examinations. They were also photographed, plaster cast, were made of their jaws and teeth, and they were toe and fingerprinted. As soon as these examinations were finished, they were killed with lethal injections of phenol to the heart, so that the next phase of the experimentation could begin with autopsies and the comparative analysis of their internal organs. What you're about to listen to is very disheartening and hard to even comprehend. But this is testimony from a surviving victim of Dr. Mengele that can be found at claimscon.org, claimscon.org. Now, her name is not going to be referred, so they call her Miss G. She is age 81. Place of persecution, Auschwitz, between March 1944 and April 1944. She was quoted during the interview saying, "Each day I was submerged in hot water. Whenever I tried to put my head out of the water in order to breathe, I was forced back into the water by Dr. Joseph Mengele's stick. He was enjoying himself. This lasted for 10 minutes. I was immediately afterwards put into cold water, and the same procedure was repeated. There were 5 people, including myself, undergoing the same process. After these daily sessions, we were taken to Barracks Number 8 in Auschwitz, which was destined for those who were to die, to see for how long we were going to survive. A woman passing by saw me, gesturing and crying for help through a hole in a plank of the wooden barracks. She loosened the plank and wrapped me. I was saved. I know nothing about the fate of the other 4 persons." Most of Dr. Mengele's victims were children. Dr. Mengele indiscriminately tortured, dissected, and experimented without the use of anesthetics or any type of numbing agent on children. We let this man slip through our fingers, and we failed. When he escaped, and he escaped to Brazil, he escaped to South America, there are other people, other franchises, other nations that were involved in letting this monster escape. Who else was involved? That is a question for the ages. We're going to go to our first break and we'll be right back.
Klaus Schwab from the World Economic Forum has said, "You will own nothing and you will love it." And that's represented by what's going on across the planet today where the economy of the world is in free fall, and nowhere is it more in evidence than with our own President Biden deliberately trying to sabotage what we have, access to food, other resources. So Americans are in a unique position, really for the first time in our history. We're going to have to provide for ourselves or subject ourselves to the whim of the government. Do you really trust a government to feed you that left 1,000 Americans behind enemy lines in Afghanistan? I don't think so. So where do you go? When you ask the question, who's the best prepper out there today? There's only one answer. Ready Made Resources and Robert Griswold. I call him King Prepper, and that's how a lot of people think of him. You have everything there you'd want, from night vision to storable food, how to prepare cooking in emergency situations, books and videos on how to prepare alternative energy, communication, first aid that you wouldn't think of, natural antibiotics, you name it, Bob has it. Now, here's the good thing about Bob Griswold that no one else does but him. You don't have to buy anything to talk to him. If you're not sure where to start with your preparation, no obligation phone call directly to Bob. You can talk to him for free. Most people will charge you an arm and a leg for a half-hour conversation. That's not Bob Griswold. He cares about helping America get prepared. Go to readymaderesources.com or you can call the number directly at 800-627-3809. Again, that contact information, readymaderesources.com for the best prepping outfit in the country, or call Bob Griswold directly, 800-627-3809.
Welcome back. This is American Vindicta. I'm your host, Doug Thornton. We're next going to discuss Nazi scientist Karl Clauberg. A conference attended by Himmler, Professor Karl Gebert, and Richard Glucks, the inspector of concentration camps, entrusted the search for the best method of sterilization, one that would make it possible to sterilize an unlimited number of people in the shortest possible time and in the simplest way possible. And they entrusted that to Professor Karl Clauberg. He was an authority in the treatment of infertility who worked during the war as head of the Department of Women's Disease at the hospital Zorgau in Germany. Dr. Clauberg set to work in barracks number 30, part of the hospital complex in the women's camp sector in Birkenau, at the end of 1942. And in April of the following year, Rudolf Höss put block number 10 in the main camp at Clauberg's disposal. Between 150 and 400 Jewish women from various countries were held in two upstairs rooms. Clauberg developed a method of non-surgical mass sterilization. Under the pretext of performing a gynecological examination, he first checked to make sure that the fallopian tubes were open and then introduced a specially prepared chemical irritant which caused acute inflammation. This led to the growth together of the tubes within a few weeks and thus their obstruction. X-rays were used to check the results of each procedure. These procedures were carried out in a brutal way. Complications were frequent, including peritonitis and hemorrhages from the reproductive tract. Now, this would be something that would lead to high fever and also sepsis. It would lead to multiple organ failure and death frequently followed. While some of Clauberg's Jewish patients died in this way, others were deliberately put to death so that autopsies could be carried out. The next doctor on our list is Horst Schumann. At almost the same time as Clauberg, SS Sturmbannführer
Horst Schumann, a Luftwaffe lieutenant and a physician, began his own sterilization experiments at Auschwitz. He was the former head of the institution for the incurably ill at Grafenegg Hospital in Württemberg, and he was also stationed at Sonnenstein, after which he became a member of a special medical commission that selected sick and overworked concentration camp prisoners for the gas chambers. Schumann moved into barracks number 30 in the Birkenau women's camp, where an X-ray sterilization station had been equipped with two Siemens X-ray machines connected by cables to a lead-shielded control cabin where Schumann could run the machines. And if you are not familiar with the Siemens X-ray machine, the next time you go into a federal building where there is an X-ray and a magnetometer station, or the next time you run through TSA, your items that are to be X-rayed will most likely go through a Siemens X-ray machine. Jewish men and women were prisoners in groups of several dozen at a time, were regularly brought there and subjected to sterilization experiments, consisting of the exposure of women's ovaries and the men's testicles to X-rays. The X-rays left them with severe radiation burns on the abdomen, the groin, and the rear, and suppurating lesions that resisted healing. Now, complications led to numerous deaths. Some of the experimental subjects were sent to the gas chamber during the selection in the camp. After the passage of several weeks, some of Schumann's male and female experimental subjects had their testicles or ovaries removed surgically, unilaterally or bilaterally, for laboratory examination and in order to obtain histological examples. Only a small portion of the victims of Klauberg and Schumann's experiments, fully aware of how they had been permanently harmed, survived Auschwitz. Next, we have Dr. Johann Paul Kremer. While prisoners were also put to death for research purposes in connection with diseases resulting from the effects of starvation on the human organism, particularly known as brown liver atrophy, a professor of anatomy from the University of Münster, who lectured there on anatomy and human genetics, SS Obersturmführer Johann Paul Kremer, carried out this same research. He chose prisoners who struck him as a suitable research subject from those who he asked to be admitted to the hospital, or he simply chose them from among the patients in the hospital, just to starve them to death to see what their body would do. Next, we have Edward Wirtz. Dr. Edward Wirtz carried out Ohama ecological experiments, and he also attempted to boost the scientific career of his younger brother, a gynecologist from Hamburg, by joining him from the spring of 1943 in experiments on cervical cancer. He chose subjects from among the Jewish women prisoners held upstairs in block number 10 in the main camp. I hope you're starting to see a pattern here, that there were doctors from many of the main industries of health that would go to Auschwitz. They would hand select their prisoners, and then they would have their way with them medically. They would indiscriminately pick out people that they thought were the best for their experiment and most likely kill them during the experiment. I thought One of the sayings of medicine was first do no harm. Somebody forgot to tell the Germans. Next we have August Hurt. In 1942, SS Hauptsturmfuhrer August Hurt, a professor and head of the Department of Anatomy at the Reich University of Strasbourg, set about assembling a collection of Jewish skeletons under the auspices of the Annenerbe Foundation. Himmler gave him permission to choose as many prisoners in Auschwitz as he needed. The selection of 115 prisoners, 79 Jewish men, 30 Jewish women, 2 Polish, and 4 Asiatics, that's a quote from them, probably Soviet POWs, and the initial processing of them was carried out by SS Hauptsturmfuhrer Bruno Beger, who came to Auschwitz in the first half of 1943. So, August Hurt was putting together a collection of skeletons, Jewish skeletons, so that he could use these skeletons in the Annenerbe Foundation, which would prove the Aryan superiority based off of Germanic skeletons compared to the Jewish skeletons, all for research, to put in museums, to put in doctor's office. And he willfully had 115 prisoners killed just so that he could use their skeletons. Next we have Emil Kashub. In the late summer of 1944, the Wehrmacht sent Emil Kashub, a physician with the rank of corporal, to Auschwitz in an effort to unmask the various methods of malingering that were becoming widespread among German soldiers, especially on the Eastern Front. These methods included self-inflicted wounds, abscesses, fever, and infectious hepatitis. He experimented on Jewish prisoners by rubbing various toxic substances into their skin or injecting them into their limbs and giving them oral medicine in order to provoke the same symptoms being presented by German soldiers. Other doctors and perpetrators. From 1941 to 1944, the camp SS physicians Frederick Intrust, Helmuth Vetter, Edward Wurz, and to a lesser extent Fritz Klein, Werner Rode, Hans Wilhelm Koenig, Victor Kopsius, head of the camp pharmacy, and Bruno Weber, director of the Hygiene Institute for the SS in Roscoe, used Auschwitz prisoners in tests of the tolerance and effectiveness of new medical preparations for drugs designated by the codenames B-1012, B-1034, B-1036, 3582, and P-111. They also used prisoners as experimental subjects in tests of the drugs Rutinol and Periston. They were acting on behalf of IG Farben Industry and mostly Bayer, which was part of the IG Farben Industry. They gave these drugs in various forms and doses to prisoners suffering from contagious diseases. The patients forced to take them suffered from disturbances of the digestive tract, including bloody vomiting, painful diarrhea that was bloody as well, containing flecks of mucus and membranes, and impairment of the circulatory system. The medical experiments surely included as well the operations carried out by SS physicians Frederick Intrust, Horst Fischer, Heinz Thilo, Fritz Klein, who did not possess qualifications as surgeons. The operations were completely unnecessary from the medical point of and were only carried out for practice. Other procedures carried out for training purposes included inducing pneumothorax, which was the collapsing of the lungs, in prisoners with tuberculosis, and performing spinal taps on prisoners with meningitis. Accounts and memoirs by former prisoners also include descriptions of other sorts of experiments, the purpose of which cannot be objectively established. The prisoners were already living under conditions that were extreme in every imaginable way, and these experiments were a death sentence for many of them. The fate of their experimental subjects was a matter of indifference for the SS physicians. In order to cover their tracks, they often ordered the victims of the experiments killed by lethal injection of phenol to the heart or to be put in the gas chambers. We're going to go to a break, and we're going to be right back.
The time for political correctness is in the rearview mirror. The fact is, the American dollar is on the verge of collapse. It's been abused mightily by those in power. Massive debt, massive inflation have left Americans with few options. Most think they have no choice but to ride it out with their money in the bank. And sadly, they're going to awaken one day and all that money is going to be gone. Do you have an option? The answer is yes. Precious metals. But knowing to go into precious metals is not the same thing as knowing who to go into precious metals with. We have an answer for you. It's called Renaissance Precious Metals. It's owned and operated by the famed Steve Quayle, radio talk show host, world famous, and an expert in precious metals. Been doing the work for 34 years. So whether you're interested in gold, silver, platinum, and palladium, whatever your interest is, wherever you want to land in your escape pod, this is it. Renaissance Precious Metals can be reached at 406-586-4842. Call Steve Quayle at 406-586-4842. You can also visit them online at sqmetals.com. Ladies and gentlemen, don't wait. The collapse is underway. The time to act is now.
Welcome back. This is American Vindicta. The next topic of our discussion comes from the United States Holocaust Museum. Between 1939 and 1945, at least 70 medical research projects involving cruel and often lethal experimentation on human subjects were conducted by the Nazis in concentration camps. These projects were carried out by established institutions within the Third Reich. It fell into three areas. Research aimed at improving the survival and rescue of German troops, testing of medical procedures and pharmaceuticals, and experiments that sought to confirm Nazi racial ideology. More than 7,000 victims of such medical experiments, have been documented. Victims include Jews, Poles, Roma gypsies, political prisoners, Soviet prisoners of war, homosexuals, and Catholic priests. The medical case, the first of 12 subsequent Nuremberg proceedings tried by the American Nuremberg Military Tribunal, began on October 25, 1946. 23 physicians, scientists, and other senior officials in the Nazi medical administration and their army were put on trial. 7 of the accused were sentenced to death and executed. 9 were sentenced to long prison sentences, and 7 were acquitted. Several major perpetrators were never tried for their crimes. Among them was Joseph Mengele, a doctor at Auschwitz-Birkenau, who escaped to South America, and Horst Schumann, who was judged physically unfit to stand trial in the 1960s. What we're going to cover next is an article from the Chemistry and Nazi Germany by Sarah Everts. Chemistry was central to Nazi endeavors. As the country became increasingly isolated from raw materials, chemists played a major role developing and improving techniques for producing synthetic alternatives to rubber, petrol, and even coffee. Chemical expertise was required to set up and run factories for these products. At Monowitz-Buna, part of the Auschwitz concentration camp system, the conglomerate company IG Farben, which included BASF, Bayer, AGFA, AGFA, and the Hoechst, used slave workers to produce synthetic rubber and oil. Average life expectancy for these workers was just a few months. The IG Farben conglomerate also produced the pesticide Zyklon B, which was used in the gas chambers. These and other details emerged in 1946 and 1947 during the trials in Nuremberg for Germany's most nefarious war criminals. But the role of many German chemists was subsequently buried, revised, whitewashed, or denied as the country focused on rebuilding after the war. And a historian of technology at Ruhr University, Helmut Maurer, who's stationed in Bochum, Germany, would tell you the exact same thing. Upon request of the German Chemical Society, the GDCH, Helmut Maurer has just completed a six-year analysis of the society's history in Nazi Germany, resulting in a 700-page tome that was delivered to the German Chemical Society this month and will be sent to potential publishers this fall. His work confirms and extends earlier research by Ut Dyckman, a historian of science at Ben-Gurion University of Negev in Israel, on the expulsion of Jews from science institutes and the activities of academic chemists during the Third Reich. In combination, their research reveals that two chemical societies that joined after World War II to become the German Chemical Society were both eagerly compliant with Aryanization, advancing the superiority of the Aryan race, and dismissed Jewish members, society leaders, and staff even before Nazi laws required them to do so. Before and during the war, the two chemical societies actively sought out collaborations with the Nazi military complex and supported the Third Reich by coordinating military research, publishing top-secret journals on poison gas, and how to develop synthetic products without access to many raw materials. Finally, when the war ended, high-profile chemists wrote letters defending the character of IG Farben chemist and executive Karl Krock, even after he had been found guilty of crimes against humanity. When Hitler came into power in 1933, Germany's chemical industry was responsible for 20% of the country's national income, Maurer says. There were some 15,000 chemists in the country, many of whom were members of Germany's two major chemical associations, the 4,000-member Association of Chemists from Germany and abroad, and important internationally read publications such as the Baustein Handbook of Organic Chemistry, where some of the material published by them. Meanwhile, the VDCH, a second association, represented more than 10,000 German industrial chemists and published the precursor to the current-day journal Aguanite Chemie. In 1933, four out of the six German Nobel laureates in chemistry were of Jewish descent: Adolf von Baer, Fritz Haber, Otto Wallach, and Richard Willstatter. Several high-profile members of the Academic Association were also Jewish. The Society's president, Alfred Wohl, its vice president, Arthur Rosenheim, and the longtime editor of the Bellstein Handbook, Bernard Prager. Within months of Hitler's ascension, all three were asked to tender their resignations, as were six Jewish staff members of the Bellstein Handbook. It was an example of anticipatory obedience, and was given that they were not legally required to do so. In addition, as early as 1935, both societies rejected new member applications from Jewish or half-Jewish chemists and began expunging existing Jewish members. DCHG board members tried to hide their early adoption of Aryan ideals from international members who they realized would object to the behavior. From board meeting records, Meyer found that the association leadership adopted a strategy to, quote, Aryanize in an opaque way to avoid showing it to the public. This was because international membership represented 40% of the society, and DCHG relied on international membership fees and journal subscriptions. In particular, in the 1930s, Germany was on the wrong side of a trade imbalance, and the country needed foreign currency to equalize it. International subscriptions could help correct the imbalance, and furthermore, in the 1930s, part of the Nazi mission was to propagate an image of German excellence, including the excellence of German science. Losing international membership would be akin to losing face. VDCH also rapidly adopted Aryanization policies. They dismissed Jews and added pro-Nazi wording to its mission statement. Aryanization was also widely adopted in academic circles. Between 1933 and 38, a quarter of all chemists and biochemists in academic institutes throughout Germany and Austria lost their jobs. 90% of these dismissals were for racial reasons. Dismissed employees were either Jewish, non-Jews with Jewish ancestry, or married to a Jew. The remaining 10% involved other people the regime found untenable. It is one of the most notable phenomena in academia in 1933 that the severest measures of National Socialist policies against science were carried out under a high degree of silence and with the frequent consensus of scientists, writes Dyckman in a review of chemistry during the Nazi era. Dyckman found only a single instance in which a German scientist refused to accept a new position created through the dismissal of a Jewish scientist. This silence regarding the unfair dismissal of Jewish colleagues was common across most fields of science, and it stemmed from some combination of anti-Semitism and nationalism, cowardice, obedience, opportunism, who knows. The vacant positions were often taken by young scientists who may have not had comparable academic career opportunities had anti-Jewish policies not cleared their way. Perhaps for this reason, Ms. Dyckman notes, 63% of young scientists joined the Nazi Party, a larger percentage than the 53% of chemists and biochemists of all ages who joined. A scientist did not have to be a Nazi Party member to behave badly. You find examples of people who never joined a Nazi organization but did horrible things, says Mark Walker, a historian of science at Union College in New York. Consider the case of Nobel laureate Richard Kuhn. He was the president of DCHG during the war and a man who never joined the Nazi Party. As soon as Hitler came into power in 1933, Kuhn immediately dismissed all his Jewish subordinates at the Kaiser Wilhelm Institute for Medical Research, where he was the head of the chemistry department. In 1936, he spontaneously denounced his colleague Otto Marov, who was still employing Jewish scientists. From the beginning of the Third Reich, Kuhn also began to pepper his speeches at home and abroad with Sieg Heil, even at non-Nazi functions. When he won the Nobel Prize in 1938 for his natural product research, Kuhn rejected the prize with a letter punctuated with his handwritten addendum: "The Führer's will is our belief." During the war, Kuhn also did extensive research on the toxic nerve gases, tabin and sarin, and intended a poison gas called somin. If you have never seen what sarin gas can do, it is truly terrifying. I would invite you to go on YouTube and look it up, Nazi sarin gas, and see what the effects were. Meanwhile, DCHG secretly coordinated research and published a top-secret journal on war-related chemistry, focusing on such topics as poison gases and polymers, and the development of synthetic products. Called the Reich Reports, the secret journal was handed from one researcher to another. Every reader had to sign when receiving the journal and when passing it along. In addition, during the war, journal editors went on trips into occupied territories where they looted research institutes of equipment, journals, and staff for use in military research. Academic chemists did fight back against the regime in one way. They heavily objected to being integrated into the National Socialist German Technical Association, a Nazi umbrella organization for science and technology. The reason? Well, the association was mostly made up of engineering organizations, and the chemists felt that as natural scientists, they were superior to engineers, whom they perceived to be a lower caste of scientists. As part of the superiority complex, they got into conflict with the top Nazi power brokers, including Deputy Nazi Party head Rudolf Hess. Quoted saying, "Chemists fought no battles for Jews. They fought no battles for immigrants. They only fought a battle against becoming involved in this engineering society, a battle for their professional interest. They eventually lost the fight and were forced to join the association, but their resistance reveals the society had huge latitude. They had free range." What chemists did was mirrored in the rest of Germany's scientific community. Chemists received a lot of support for the research from the Nazi regime, but Dyckman says that, "I am not sure we can say they were more opportunistic than other scientists." Comparable percentages of biologists and physiologists and chemists joined the Nazi Party. The German Biological Society, for example, had a journal called Der Biolog, The Biologist, that was entirely full of Nazi ideology, and psychologists and biologists participated in terrible human experiments. The German Physical Society was, however, much slower than most other science societies to include all Jews from membership, or they excluded all Jews. A science historian at the University of Stuttgart, Klaus Henschel, helps to describe a lot of this, and he says the physicists did not exclude Jews until 1938 to 39, and only under pressure from Nazi authorities. The German Physical Society also avoided joining the association. You can say that You can say what wonderful people these physicists were, Henschel says, but in truth, they had many motivations that were not necessarily more ethically superior to those of the other scientists. For example, they also resisted joining the Nazi society made up of engineers on the basis of the same superiority complex chemists had. Also, physicists benefit from the fact that initially they were just not seen as that important to the regime. Engineering and chemistry were more relevant than physics and mathematics to Nazi goals. But as the war progressed, physicists increasingly did military research in such areas as missiles, sonar, and nuclear weapons. After the war ended, an international scientist began asking pointed questions about the activities of the German colleagues. German researchers increasingly adopted a false narrative that they had suffered under Hitler despite their flush funding under the Third Reich. They would say the Nazis were anti-intellectual, anti-scientific, and anti-basic research. And this is absolutely false. The Third Reich was a paradise for these scientists. They compared to the situation up to 1933 when there were many cutbacks because of financial constraints imposed by the terms of the Treaty of Versailles, which ended World War I. Many chemists claim they didn't know what had been happening at Auschwitz, Monowitz, Buna factory, and at other concentration camps, but how can you get such a large chemical factory established and running smoothly without any chemists present? Now, Kuhn, for instance, may not have personally visited any concentration camps, but as director of the Kaiser Wilhelm Institute for Medical Research and president of DCHG throughout the war, he was certainly privy to some aspects of Hitler's experimentation. Now, some chemists claim to have spent the war doing pure research, but if you look carefully, you see it was definitely military research. They would say, I was just working on metal carbonyls. And metal carbonyls can disable the gas mask filters soldiers used as protections. And other chemists involved in military research repurposed their discoveries for civilian purposes post-war. For example, Kurt Stanchion, a Nazi party member since 1925, spent the war developing a device to uniformly spray poison gas on enemy soldiers. The device was turned into a pesticide delivery system for agricultural applications in 1950. Finally, many scientists claimed they were victims during the post-war period, saying the Allies were implementing a victor's justice. They were banded together to show the support of IG Farben chemists and board members on trial in Nuremberg. For example, Ms. Deitman notes that after the Nuremberg trials, the DCHG officials wrote a letter to the head of the American zone of occupation in post-war Germany, complaining about harsh sentences for IG Farben executives, quoted saying, "We do not understand the severity of the prison sentences imposed on men who, in our opinion, are in this way unjustly made comparable to common criminals. We cannot believe from our knowledge of the convicted that dishonorable thought or deeds have really been proven against them." After the war, the Allies were threatening severe punishment. Everyone was afraid of that. Everyone had a conspiratorial mood, not speaking about the past openly, so the Allies wouldn't get any clues about what was really going on, and many documents were burned. These are notes from Henschel. Indeed, the Allies, and particularly the Americans, did not always behave with moral integrity or with transparency in Germany's post-war period, and keen to profit on sophisticated Nazi military and industrial science and technology, and afraid it might fall into the hands of the Russians, their new Cold War enemy, the U.S. military established Operation Paperclip. When interviewing Nazi scientists after the war, Army officials would put a paperclip on the portfolios of those scientists who could be more useful to the American military. Those individuals would then have their Nazi affiliations whitewashed, new biographies written, and a security clearance and a ticket to the U.S. issued. It was so completely immoral, Ms. Dyckman is quoted saying. The most famous beneficiary of Operation Paperclip was Wernher von Braun, who headed Nazi missile research. He was also a Nazi Party member, and then went to work for the United States National Aeronautics and Space Administration after the war. His expertise is widely cited as one reason U.S. astronauts were the first to reach the moon. We tracked down a dozen names of Nazi-era chemists who went to work in the U.S., for example, on chemical weapons for the U.S. Army and in a synthetic fuels lab at the U.S. Bureau of Mines. Many other scientists in Germany went through denazification, a process in which the ethics of one's wartime behavior was evaluated and sometimes cleared or whitewashed through letters of support from colleagues or friends. For those deemed to be Nazis, the denazification process resulted in brief jail time or a fine. And there were people that were pretty badly caught in National Socialism system with a lot of dirt on them, who were, in the end, coming out of the denazification process with a fee or a half-a-year prison sentence. Many historians, or many of the first historians trying to probe science under the Nazis during the 1980s, faced pushback from those who referred to let sleeping dogs lie. And people were giving examples for why we were bringing over Nazis to help America. And I'm going to leave you with this. When somebody asks you, what did your society do for National Socialism? It is interesting to me that people would say, it is unacceptable nowadays to answer, I don't know. Now, that is from Wolfram Koch and Henning Hoff, who investigated Wolfram Koch, who was at that point in time the former president of the GDCH of Germany. Now, before I leave you, I want you to consider this. Take a look at Dr. Fauci and everything that's going on within America and China and all over the world with the vaccines. And I want you to do your research. May discover some of these people are not out for our benefits. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Doug Thornton. This is American Vindicta. All stations, all call signs. Prepare for transmission. This is Wrecker Actual. Dearly beloved, avenge not yourselves, but rather give place unto wrath. For it is written, vengeance is mine. I will repay, saith the Lord. End of transmission.